managed to improve in terms of payment to service providers within 30 days. Our chairperson has mentioned that in the audit process, we do have areas that the auditor AG has identified. We are taking forward those areas for improvement as well. So on a lot of these targets, there are areas where our improvements have been highlighted for us, and we are looking at those. There were some internal focus targets as well related to employee performance ratings and that was achieved. The stakeholder perception index that CABB done it was one of the first. So we started off without having a base really, and we achieved a certain result being 55% of a stakeholder perception index. It's somewhere where we can work from. So, you know, stakeholders have highlighted certain areas for improvement, and it's an area that now that we have that, it's for us to build upon it and improve the perception of stakeholders. I think it will be also important to tell the members that in terms of the CABB legislation, there is a statutory requirement for a 5-year review of the CABB. And our shareholder, DPWI, are about to announce the appointment of a panel. There will be an independent review panel on the activities of the CABB. Provides a wonderful opportunity for really CABB to get objective feedback more, but you know, that also touched on the technical issues as well. And also, it involves interviews with external stakeholders, so then we get a very objective view in terms of how CABB is performing. So, in terms of the perception survey, I think the big issue for CABB that we pick up is that there's a lot of expectation in the CABB. One of those entities that, you know, yes, we run a National Register of Contractors and Projects, but there's a strong call for the CABB can do more. And we committed to becoming more impactful in that regard, and I think we will see good things going forward. The stakeholders are expressing that there is hope for CABB, but we need to really be able to be impactful, and we agree with that. Also, in terms of the National Stakeholder Forum, we did mention it in the oversight visit of the committee, and what we did is that we really moved the National Stakeholder Forum from being a meeting on a day to being more of a meaningful forum where the forum actually gets involved in the nuts and bolts of the work of the CABB over the 2-year period of the appointment, and then we can make meaningful impact. We, of course, stakeholders would love us to move faster than you know, than we can possibly, but we are really trying to scale that up. So we have 3 National Stakeholder Forum meetings in the period, and over that period we were fortunate that the Minister was in attendance as per the CABB Act. We're planning the next Stakeholder Forum, that will be in November, and with that we're also proceeding that with other focus group meetings and National Stakeholder Forum, excluding, a forum excluding the Minister, and the formal National Stakeholder Forum would be then, the meeting will be convened in November. Some of the other areas relate to the registration and the accuracy in terms of the award, so that has been in hand. The provincial offices then in terms of basic administration has also been in hand. But to reiterate, a strong call for CABB is really to be doing more at provincial level. So the organizational design and where we're moving things is that we're moving our registration assessment process to the provinces. When a contractor walks into a provincial office, they don't have to wait for, for a head office to be able to be giving, you know, more direction. Right there and then the contractor can get access to advisory services, and this is really where we want to move. From where we're sitting, we're not satisfied that, we're not happy with the model of the head office being, the expert point. Yeah, centralized. We'd like to decentralize those services. And it is heading that way, and there's a lot of traction actually being made. In fact, today we actually have a roadshow out on the provinces, two of the provinces where we're actually rolling out on the organizational design. On this slide, we did share with members before that the tender value adjustments, so where contractors are registered on the register of contractors, the tender value ranges have been increased. I won't go into the whole table, but just illustrate 1 or 2. So for example, at grade 7, where contractors would work up to 40 million rand, that's on any single project, The tender venue numbers have been adjusted as of 7th of October, which was this week, coincidentally. And so in that example, a grade 7 would now work up to 60 million rand. I think one of the key issues on this slide is the grade 1 level as well. So grade 1 were, before the 7th of October, were, could do projects up to 200,000 rand, and now that's been adjusted up to 500,000 rand. That will provide a nice stepping stone for contractors to be able to work within that range up to 500,000 rand, and then being able to use that to upgrade into your grade 2 level. Also that in the interest of time, you know, we haven't got the, we haven't put the detailed registration criteria. We could always share that with you at an appropriate platform, but if you look at the criteria, it actually will be much easier for grade 1s now to bump, get up into your grade 2 level there as well. And across the board, those are the increases that are reflected. Other areas in terms of achievement, in terms of business advisory services. So we have provided services to our contractors, to our provincial offices, and they've rated us. But clearly there's a need for us to do more and expand our services. I think a very important area also is the participation of TVET colleges, where we actually have two TVET colleges participating in WorldSkills. And if you look at the WorldSkills process, which ultimately means in construction, it's really two or three representatives in particular areas, for example, was electrical, bricklaying, and I think the third area was plumbing. And in terms of those areas, there is more, not the number really, but what it is the participation of the TVET colleges that actually increases the focus on actually building your quality artisans and those kind of skills. So that process actually has been great, and we've been through that in the period under Regional 22 TVET colleges participating. And going forward, this is an annual program, we'll be looking at strengthening that. We also were fortunate to have started a process where our contractors are then exposed to opportunities out of South Africa. And what we found is that it's an area where you know one could debate a lot in terms of you know the issue. But if you look at into the other bodies like the CABB in other countries, the exposure of the country companies from that country to opportunities out of the country is important. So it does provide an important source of work there. And we had many examples where we were exposed to those kind of arrangements. And similarly, we had one of the missions we did, Eswatini, Mozambique, we've taken contractors across. We actually want to carry on with that program, and the learning that comes out of that is in fact quite great. Also to say with that as well, that CADB, we've had a lot of interaction with similar bodies in other African countries that also run national registers or would like to run national registers and similar programs as the CADB. We've had a lot of sharing over the years. And in the future, you might find that there might be a little more to do where contractors then, you know, where we can work with our counterparts in other countries in order to ease the work that our contractors can do, ease the access of our contractors to work, basically. Okay. The partnerships, some of them that we were undertaking over the year was the CEDA Construction Incubator, where in the terms of that process, 100 contractors were selected, and then those contractors in terms of their incubation and support. And that provides really a platform for us to move forward as we go along with improving our services. And then that also formed the basis for a mentorship plan to address the areas for attention. And then 25 contractors did receive those services. I already talked about world skills. I won't go into the details, but really the critical part about this was the participation of your TVET colleges and really to move the quality of your artisans that are coming out. I think it's a pretty critical area for us. The export promotion, which is in southern Mozambique, and we looked at opportunities and access to information on how to source work. There are some key projects as well that are on the horizon, and in terms of that, those opportunities, in terms of how our contractors can even test into those opportunities as well. The area of industry and transformation, in terms of that, yes, the CADB's construction monitors are very important. We we find ourselves that we have one central point that we play with KDB, because we're well placed to be able to monitor in the industry and to share information so that for targeting we can actually then have a focused target in what's coming out. So we produce four quarterly monitors a year, and they have different focus areas, including transformation, procurement spend, labor, and so those are well on track. In terms of the other target was on the line of value, contractor development support. And in terms of that, we managed to contribute 1.5 million when contractor development support, and that was achieved. The details can be made available. I think moving to some of the what the picture is telling us in terms of the registration, I think for some years now, you know, we've been in engagement related to the matter of the grade 7 to 9 being the key areas in terms of where transformation would be important in terms of that focus. I think critical to know that while you see across the board, yes, there might be 89%, and there's a deliberate reason why grade 1 is not here, because you find it to be 99.0%. So you'll really see the impact in terms of transformation. You might find overall, yes, grade 2 to 9 is showing that 89% of companies are black owned, but if you look at the project access, it's really just over 50% of the projects are accessed by black owned contractors. With the participation, the ownership it really shows that much more needs to go there in terms of the work. We also, in terms of the register, track women ownership, and in terms of the women ownership patterns, we find, for example, grade 2 to 4, 32% of the registered companies are women owned, and it drops as you go up the grade. But what's important is that we're also tracking the value of work given to those contractors. So for women-owned contractors, they would have received only 25% of the work, but represented a higher percent of the ownership. So it really provides a way to see exactly what is taking place. I think it's important to share with the members as well, because we engage with contractors and we engage with, you know, we understand, you know, some of the changing patterns in the industry. Things are changing. We've had cases recently where big contractors came to CADB to express the actual how those companies are changing and what they would need to be do to be registered on the register. We had a case recently where Avenge, so Grenica, in terms of selling Grenica LTA, and Grenica LTA eventually becoming a black-owned company, and what would the mechanism they engage there in, and how do they then keep their registration. And from here we decided to be very, we really assess it very closely. We found a trend, for example, over the years, that you find companies that are not saying, like, example of Avenge and Grenica, just in general. You find companies that would want to change the ownership profile, but really in the new entity you find that there isn't adequate capacity put in the new entity. So it's almost sometimes you say like a shell of a company, and there's not much in there. So from CDB side, we're also very critical of applications that we receive like that, and we want to see that there's meaningful empowerment. I think one important area that we've focused on is the area of the recognition of women contractors. We decided to go a step further and not just have it as a recognition on the day. We commenced a process where over a two-year period there would be women contractors that would be targeted or given criteria by which those contractors can be recognized. And we have some very good examples of women-owned contractors in terms of their improvement in the industry and in those success stories. So we did have a launch in terms of on Women's Month, but it's really the process over the next 2 years in which we will have a proper recognition process of women, a proper achievement that we can recognize. I think at this stage we'd like to go to some of the areas of non-achievement and where we need to improve there. Okay, so in terms of the one area that I mentioned earlier, that we are undergoing an organizational design process, really a restructuring. And in terms of that restructure process, there were certain timelines that had to be met, or certain project deliverables that had to be met before others were met. So, for example, the competency assessment. There were certain stages of the OD that had to be completed before you do the competency assessment. We have subsequently done the competency assessment, and we're at a stage where people are being migrated from the old structure to the new structure, as well as then priority positions identified. and it cannot be solved internally, then it will go outside. So there's just a timing issue in terms of the organizational design process. The target on employee satisfaction, yes, this one was a bit internal focus. And in terms of the some of the areas where our own CADB employees raised issues of career progression, there were also issues in terms of leadership stability. Our chairperson may even speak to that more, but in terms of that, there is currently a process where the executive is being exposed. The CADB has filled the key positions of the chief financial officer and chief information officer. They're busy with the other positions. In terms of the CEO, our chairperson could always add to that, but this process has been ongoing. One of our targets was to have a strong audit risk rating. Overall, on the outcome, we ended up with a moderate audit rating as opposed to strong. Some of the areas identified were internal control deficiencies. We've daily focused on looking at what those areas are and how we can close that gap. It's also linked to the way we are structured as well. And you find that certain areas were undercapacitated, but those are now being prioritized in terms of the audit findings in terms of the OD project, organizational design, where those key positions are going to be prioritized. Along the way, we've also learned some lessons. As the chairperson has said, some of our target setting, you find that, you know, we go to a certain target only to find that the way the target is expressed, there's a technical issue related to the calculation of the target. So those lessons we've already taken in terms of what the AG has come back to us with, and we've tried to then improve those. Having said that, our chairperson has mentioned that we're reporting on the second last year of the five-year plan. We're currently in now the fifth of year of the five-year strategic period. We are in a situation where some of our targets are like not changeable within this five-year cycle, but in our strategic planning, we've really put a lot of emphasis on improving our target setting. Some of the examples I shared with you just now is some of the example of macroeconomic targets that may be out of our control, but I'll get to that. Registration processing, the target's on 100% and we achieved 99%. Once again here, this is an area where our technology must help us because we find that we're too manual. You find that going into a provincial office, contractors then applying, we want to reduce the numbers. And even within the process, we want to be able to automate more. So we don't want to rely on manual processes of things like date stamps and all of that. A lot of that can be automated. Our work is to really provide an advisory service at the center. So we actually have made a lot of placed a lot of effort in that regard. The area we mentioned on performance improvement, in this area here, I think it's very critical to state that most of our standards, they are actually currently deemed to be optional. So the standards that CADB put out. What's very important now is the discussion is how the CADB standards that we are publishing, how can these be mandatory? We put out so many standards over the years, and you know, clients could choose to ignore them. So for example, as a practical example, the recent ones that you might see published pretty soon as it passes our board and the department is, for example, the standard on prompt payment. So if you take that example, you find that standard doesn't only include payments from client departments to main contractors. It also includes main contractor payments to subcontractors. And if you know some of the issues that that you would receive in your oversight visit, there's issues, for example, where, pay when paid, when the subcontractor actually waits a very long time to get paid. And it's a vicious cycle because the main contractor is waiting for the client to pay the main contractor. So the bigger question here is really about CADB standards and how can CADB really have more teeth. I think it's important to state here that the best practice project assessment scheme and the fee related to that was a process that went through the public comment process at the stage of the department now with the minister. And once the minister, the process for review and approval is there, it would have a tremendous impact on CADB doing a lot in terms of performance improvement. And then our development support strategy will also be honest with that. So in this rating here, the performance rating by clients is not achieved. And it also relates to the non-mandatory nature of those performance improvements, but also an area for improved target setting for the CADB. Another area for KDB, that given that we have an industry development mandate, sometimes in terms of meeting that mandate, we have targets that have a macroeconomic type of a dependency. So for example, access to credit in the industry, and then CIDB being measured at the rate or the level of access to credit in the industry. And one could argue that it's somewhat, you know, CIDB can influence that and do a lot to improve it, but as an entity, you know, do you really need a target that has a macroeconomic dependency to that extent? Maybe your actual impact can be improved in that regard. But having said that, there's a lot that we are doing related to the issue of access to credit as well. And once again, harnessed by that best practice project assessment fee. Recently, we made some traction in terms of job fund and other areas. CFO can always expand if need be. Some of the areas in terms of the outcomes, audit outcomes and corrective action plans, the areas identified included the usefulness and reliability of information. Once again, coming back to our systems as well and how we can rely more on automation. Records management as well related to that. We talked about key vacancies need to be filled. As I said, the senior positions are being filled. The CEO level has been also for some time in the making. The improved implementation of policies and procedures and really internal control also links to our CIDB capacity that we really are also improving on. One area particularly from the Auditor General, also on the financial management side, that's an area as well. What we want to do this year is do a preliminary financial statement where we'll also then get a pre-audit as well. That's on the cards for this year. We will do a pre-audit in terms of financial statements as well. I won't go into all the details of the corrective action plan, but there are certain key deliverables that we are looking at in terms of improvement, such as the positions to be filled, closer tracking in terms of the audit areas, you know, filling vacancies. And yes, we mentioned the interim financial audit with the pre-audit. Those are some areas that we are looking at improving. I think at this stage, I'd ask Mr. Sibande to come in on the audited financial information and to share with you.
Thank you, SCO. Good morning, Honorable Members, Honorable Chair, colleagues from the CPWD, and of course, AG in the House. I think the first comment I want to give effect to. I think the CEO did indicate that CIDB has been able to do partnership on the issue of the top fund, and maybe we just want to explain that what do we mean by the top fund partnership. We've concluded an agreement with National Treasury, which will see CIDB involved in a direct partnership with some of the small and medium enterprises within the construction sector. Being developed, we would target about 260 of those companies in construction who then go into this particular program and process in terms of development. What key with that particular program? This will, among other things, enable what you call your pipelines, which will be able to provide these particular companies with the work opportunities, and of course. Fundamentally, to the issue of access to credit, because that particular arrangement will enable creation of a funding structure to the value of about 200 million, which will be used towards funding these particular SMEs towards their assessing the condition of available credit to these particular entities. I think that is one of the issues that we've been able to achieve and agree upon the CIDB as part of our initiatives to ensure that we're being inclusive in terms of our developmental work as the CIDB. In terms of the financial statement, for the year under review, we were able to actually achieve a revenue of 190 million. That is in comparison to the previous year of 174 million. And I think pretty much that is about 50 million increase in our revenue. And if you compare to the previous year of 177, it does indicate that CIDB actually has been able to be very strong in terms of its particular financial funding. If you're looking at where the money is coming from, the money is mainly coming from registration, about 100 million coming from the registration fees, and then 16 million is coming from the financial income. So that is pretty much part of our revenue. And I think that that's the indication that we say SAIDB, we are moving away from relying on government. We try to sustain ourselves as much as we can. In terms of the expenditure, we had a budget of 72 million to be spent towards the administration expenditure, and we spent about 78 million, which was pretty much about 5 million overspent in that aspect. And the 5 million that we understand or we overspend on pretty much relates to CITP spending a little bit more on the consultation and professional services. Primarily also the fact that we were still in the process of theology, and some of the functions which we then capacitate within the rollout of the structure are currently being outsourced. As an example, our legal department, which we currently outsourcing, and upon us rolling out and collecting the structure, we'll come inside. So we'll have a saving as soon as we roll out the structure. So that's the reason why we're having sort of overspending in administration expenditure. Personal expenditure, our budget is $101 million, and we spent $83 million. The reason why you see that we had a huge saving in personal expenditure is the fact that when we're budgeting with a new structure in mind, to say that the new structure was already rolled out. Unfortunately, due to the fact that we're still rolling it out, we're not able to actually fill all the positions, and we are in the process of filling positions. As a result, we then record the sort of a saving in that aspect. So that will just give the justification why then you have a saving. And of course, the SNCO did indicate that we currently live in that process, and then we usually start rolling out the implementation, and we will try to be able to see that saving being deployed to the business. The startup for the year was an amount of 26 million and 26 million. And of course, we have received a green light from the Treasury to retain this particular fund towards the process of CIDB processing its own office accommodation, and we believe we complete the process within the financial year, so that is, as well as, of course, the leasing in the provincial offices. Because I think as the ACCAO did indicate that we want to move into a process whereby we are becoming more intimately involved in terms of our mandate, and by so doing, we also need to provide adequate resources and proper offices within our leases. So our provincial offices. So we will be trying to roll out that as well. In terms of the current asset and the balance sheet may have increased from the previous year by 40%, and the majority of the increase of our budget is within the current asset, where we've seen about 13% increase. Of course, if you're looking at where most of the increase come from, it will come from the cash and equivalent. Where in the previous years we had about 211 million, and we've moved to 2.1, meaning that we have been able to be conservative in how we're managing our resources, and we are still able to maintain adequate cash resources within our books. In terms of non-current assets, we have actually the DCM invested in the DCM in terms of the assets, and our property plant and equipment have increased by 1.2 million. And of course, the intangible assets have increased from 4 million to 8 million. What the CEO did indicate that we do rely on our IT system. We have taken a position to invest significantly in IT systems to enable us to be able to automate most of our processes. And as a result, there's been an increase in how CIDB is investing towards its intangible assets. Most of the increase, which about 4 million, which we recorded, was investment on the IT infrastructure. Our surplus increased by 50 million, and I think pretty much looking at the current liabilities, we didn't have much account liabilities. We remained within about 6% in that aspect. In terms of the budget performance for the NCF, we spent in administration about 82 million for 1920. Then in 2021 we spent about 86 million, and in 2021-22 91 million, and 95 million in 2022 and 2023. And then construction industrial regulation is 71 million. And in 2021, 75 million. 2021-22, 79 million. And in 2022-23, about 83 million. Construction industry performance, we're moving from 16 million in 2021, about 17 million. In about 2022, about 18 million. And then, of course, I think it's part of our strategy. If you're looking at the trend over the years, we have significantly increased in 2022-2023, the allocation for the transformation and the construction industry performance. Well, I think our target is now shifting to be more effective in how we do things in terms of the transformation industry. So we will then increase our investment in that aspect. Under development and capacitation, in 2019-20, about 14 million, and in 2021, about 15 million, then in 2021-22, 16 million, then in 2022-23, we order to increase significantly more than the normal adjustment to 20 million. Was in that aspect, we will be in partnership with a few in the city where you said we will establish a center of excellence. So we do believe that in that aspect, that investment will go towards a CITP initiative with a university that we choose where CITP will establish a center of excellence for construction. So we will then be able to then improve our investment in that aspect. I think I'm going to hand over back to you, Monsieur.
Thank you, Chair. I think we'll stop there. That was the formal presentation. Thank you. I don't know, Chair, for you, but Chair, I will come through. Thank you.
Thank you, to all, and first of all, we welcome the Deputy Minister and the team who arrived for us and already started. We have noted the apologies of the minister. But she won't be with us today. I then invite questions, comments from honorable members. Honorable Trin, you are number one. Honorable Finis are number two. Honorable Priam, number three. Honorable Kopane, number four. Honorable Shabalala, number five. In that order.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all. Thank you for the presentation. It is appreciated. We also appreciate the fact that CIDB, while not necessarily achieving a clean audit, is en route to doing that. This committee obviously has the responsibility of monitoring and ensuring that you actually do get to a clean audit. That particular goal, I think, can never be underestimated. So we look forward to our next sitting where you come to us and say that you actually have achieved a clean audit. Chair, I think the Chair of the Board has indicated, obviously, the 30 performance targets, only 23 of the 30 were achieved. That equates to a 76.6% achievement. From a mathematical point of view, 76.6% is good, it's just short of an A. However, if you translate that to an economic employment, it means that it can actually mean that a huge chunk of finances that could have gone into the construction sector have not gone in, or a huge number of people were not employed because those targets were not reached. So I think it's important that the targets that are set are targets that are reached. Secondly, Chair, I on the development and capacitation presentation that was made, there seems to be differences with the, and I want to have some answers, there seems to be differences in terms of the summary and analysis that was given to us, because the summary analysis indicates that the
there is a target of 0.01, that's on page 8 of 15, on the summary analysis that's given to us. Under development and capacitation, there's a target of 0.01% on the GFCF, your gross fixed capital formation. And of that particular target, only 0.00056% was achieved. Now that's a 5.6% achievement on the target. So that is a very poor performance on that. So on the analysis that we were given, it set the target of 0.01. However, in your presentation, the target in the presentation is 0.05. So there's that discrepancy. I think if you could actually speak to that. My understanding of that GFCF, that fund, is that it's very similar to your GDP of the construction, that's the value of the construction, and you were wanting to obtain that particular percentage of that value to be passed on, and it's still a very small percentage. Even if your target is 0.01, whichever is the correct one, and I'm not sure based on our information that we've given, but it's still also a very small percentage of the actual value of what the construction industry has to offer. So could you give some clarity also, please, on those particular targets? And then obviously, also within the analysis that we were given, one of the targets was to reach some 1,000 learners, and I think, and that's also on page 8 of 15 of our summary of the analysis, and of those 1,000, only 118 learners received workplace learning opportunities. So again, a very poor performance, particularly with regards to reaching learners. The target of reaching 1,000 as opposed to the millions that are unemployed also is a very small target. But you're only then, in terms of what we were presented, you've only reached 118 learners. Again, if one were to put that into percentages, it's a poor percentage. So I am concerned about the failure with regards to the targets that are being set. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to the representatives from CIDB. I'll start with slide 15 of 45. Your annual target and your achieved target through other revenue streams. I want to know what are the other revenues excluding, or is your revenue only based on the money that is paid by contractors for registration? And then I'll move to slide 20. 25 technical and vocational education training TVET. How many of the students were female, and if any of the winners were female, and if there were no female, why were there no female, and what were the challenges, and how are you going to address those challenges? And then the winners from these colleges that have been taken to Russia, if I'm correct. Yeah, they've been taken to Russia. On their return, what's going to happen to the students, and how is South Africa going to benefit from them, from the knowledge that they come with? Because I know some of these competitions have got the tendency of taking students or learners, they win, and then after that they just finish into thin air with the knowledge, and nobody makes it a priority that they actually get employment. And then slide 23. I'm not sure if it's slide 23, but I've written a question there. Allocation for selection of projects. Is preference given to contractors within the area, the province, the region, or the town?
when a project is going to be done in a certain area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning to the team from CIDD and congratulations on a good audit outcome. Just a couple of things. Slide 9, one of your figures don't tally. The one out on that slide. If you look at the numbers there, you're saying 30.23.7, but if you look at the industry performance and transformation numbers, 5.42 don't tally. So I'm not sure how many you did achieve or didn't achieve on that slide. Slide 9. The audited performance information results. If you look at that, at the industry performance and transformation, you've got 5.42. Okay, so one of those is incorrect. Then, just on the World Skills International competition, this was fantastic. It's a wonderful thing. Where did we come? Did any of our people actually achieve a placing? What did we learn from it? Much like what my colleague here said, and did we learn anything that can be applied going forward? In other words, did we find new best practices, etc., that can be applied by those students? Slide 30 relates obviously to the project register. I think that was what it related to. Yesterday we spoke quite a bit to the IDT about the so-called construction mafia. And one of the ways in which we can prevent new SMEs from holding contractors hostage on projects, because they're doing this at the moment. A lot of contractors are being held hostage and they're being told, right, you give us 30% or we shut down your site, etc., etc. My feeling, and this is a personal feeling, is that one of the ways that we can mitigate that is through the CIDB's classifications, by making sure that all SMEs and all subcontractors are classified or form part of the CIDB or part of your contract register, because then when a big contractor goes in and says, okay, we are only appointing SMEs that are registered with the CIDB, that strengthens your arm and it then obviously protects the contractors. So these contract registers and the register of contractors are absolutely critical in ensuring that we don't have delays. I cited yesterday there's a police station in the Eastern Cape that they're about to start phase 2 of the development, and that whole site has been shut down for 2 weeks because new emerging SMEs are suddenly demanding 30% of the project. So I believe that the CIDB needs to play a very, very strong role in terms of making sure that SMEs are properly accredited. And that links into slide 32 as well, where you're talking about the PSP. Is there a link between your competence standard and your registration? In other words, if you're classifying somebody, are there two separate classifications? In other words, you classify in terms of the monetary amount that they can do, and then have you got a separate classification in terms of competence? And why can these not be married? In other words, if you're appointing somebody who's a Category 1, then that person needs to also have met certain competency requirements, so that we're strengthening our SMEs, we're strengthening our subcontractors, and we're using all the mechanisms available to make sure that they are legitimate and they're getting proper support. Contractor fines of $405,000, what are these? Are these based on your code of conduct, or on what basis are you fining contractors? The CIDB code of conduct, to whom does it apply? How is it enforced? Do you have every contractor who's listed on your contract register a signatory to that? I noticed also in your other expenditure, your rentals increased by $3 million. But from what I can see and from what we were told previously, you don't pay rental on most of your offices because you get them from the department, aside from Mpumalanga, from what I can ascertain in the short reading I've done here. But there is a R3 million increase in rental for the year. And then finally, you've got an increase of R500,000 in venue expenses. If you could maybe just clarify what those were for. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Mine is on slide number 12. slide number 12, you said that your annual target is 100% of service provider pay within 30 days, and you achieve 100%. That is so amazing. Yesterday we had many entities, including the department. We are still struggling to get it. If maybe you can explain to us what is it that you are doing better that other people are failing to do, because that is a problem that we're having with all government departments. And I'm also chair, under the employment number by occupational level, you said that you were having about 27 fifth-term contracts in terms of your employees. So if maybe you can clarify at which level this 27 fifth-term contracts are situated within the organization. And you also said that you had one employee with a disability on a fifth-term contract. I want to understand, is it on a fifth-term contract or a temporary one? The AG also raised some concerns regarding the key positions that are not filled, that are remain vacant. If maybe you can explain to us what are the future plans, because really if they resulted in oversight responsibilities with your performance that is not really looking good, there's some compliance issues and internal control not being adequate. If maybe you can explain that. The AG also raised the concern regarding the lack of sufficient and adequate qualified and skilled staff to support senior management. That's the thing that he's concerned. What is it that you are going to do? Are you having some plans to rectify the situation? Also, there's a lack of training and development intervention to capacitate middle managers so that they can provide supervision. And there's also a lack of accountability among those middle managers. Is there any plan that you are planning to do, because the agency is concerned about that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one needs to appreciate the presentation, but also appreciate the fact that the financial performance and the foreseeable budgeting for the future is incremental in its nature, which to me tells me that even your target and your numbers, as my other colleague has said, even including the incubation, we are looking at I think one is looking forward to see the numbers for incubation and other spheres increasing with your incremental budget, but at the same time taking the cognizance of the fact of the demographics and also the number, the ratio of the youth that is unemployed, so that we talk of the sizable number that is in turn with the total number of the that we have. Your page 17, I'm not sure, I am relying on this annual report so, but nevertheless, it's okay. I will not say the other pages, but page 17, you have your breakdown, or you have the grading, designation, the number of beneficiaries, and one needs to also appreciate the fact that your CIGD1 is now sitting at 500 rather than what you used to have. I think it will even take care of the how many numbers of subcontractors that you will have under the main contractors. I am not sure at what level, or is it at your level where you have a close monitoring of how the main contractors deal with the subcontractors, whether the subcontractors are from the area. I've heard some of the subcontractors saying you can be taken by this big guy being a subcontractor, but they squeeze you out in terms of the numbers. You will leave the end of the contract dry rather than what you anticipated, because they tell you of overheads and whatever. Not sure whether it fits in terms of monitoring, because you can sit here and go out and say subcontracting is good, it does happen, but what is the value that, except of course for grading, what is the value of money? Is this person able to be on his own and have the capital that all of us have seen in the figure? That is one other area. But you have here the list of beneficiaries, and you have CITP 9, that the 48 beneficiaries. My question would be, even if it's not for today, is the demographics and the geographical spread for that matter. What are we talking about around this number? So that you don't find people concentrated in Johannesburg, and then in other areas we don't put our efforts in terms of mobilizing even the your sister sector, so that we have a balanced a number and the redistribution that is qualitative and fair. The issue you have spoken to, you have quoted the president when he talked about how the issue of experience has the negative effect on people that need to be in the economic mainstream. But I just want to check in your grading whether there has ever been any discussion around the prior knowledge. I don't know where do we put that, or it doesn't exist, or what do we do about that? The issue of municipalities, you've touched on the municipalities and the project that they have run, but I am not sure whether you do have the specific project that the municipalities have done. I will give you an example, because my other colleagues, they know the area of Ladysmith. There's been a proposal, the project has been in the pipeline. But over and above whatever that you can find in the IDP, there is something that is very upset. There is a swimming pool that is in the pipeline. This swimming pool, I think it runs into million, if not two or four. And that's what one gathered in the process. For me, the list of projects can be there, but the value for money is something else. And whether does it have the impact? It may not fit with you, but I was just looking and saying to myself, this is the example that we sit with in some of our municipalities. That is what one discovered in Ladysmith. I think I've never heard of a entity that has had the lack of having the role over. But I think maybe there's something good that you're doing so that you deserve the role over. You've been accorded by the treasury, or yeah, and also the issue of the ITC. You said you are going to automate most of the things, because some of the things that may have cause the regression was around the manual. But I'm not sure where do you find it in your plan and in your budget, where you're specific about the ITC, so that we don't find ourselves in a position where you say you overspent because you did not foresee the issue of the ITC. The issue of the legal expertise, I am not sure whether was it not proper for you to share for the shared service between yourself and the department, or was it not possible to share the legal expertise that exists? Even the issue of incubation, working together as these entities, even the department, because they do have the incubation, if I'm not mistaken, they set at 0-0 in terms of the achievement. I am not sure whether you can be able to work together as entities and see what you have. You may come up with a very sizable number that could make an impact. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, for your questions and comments. Just few from me. I want to add my voice in appreciating your positive outcome from OLTA General. It means that a lot of work was done to achieve that. But also let's appreciate the partnership that you're getting in with SMMEs. That would be very good for our country and its developing economy. But two issues, one relating on the oversight visit that we did in Maldives. When we were at CBE, those professional councils raised a critical issue, especially the architects, on this 80-20 whatever. I'm not good on those things. But there's one aspect that they raised, that when we were talking of the transformation issue, they raised that CBE, CIDD comes up with norms and standards, and one of them is the 80-20. Why they were saying that? They would say that this tender would come up and request a company that has been in business for 8 years. And if you talk of our country, that it got freedom in 25 years back, that means all the so-called black companies won't make it. And that is the reality that we all know. So that is not favorable for the black business companies. We even said, we requested that, I don't know whether it was communicated to you or not, that I don't know what my voice is. Going to read that with you. So I am raising it now. So look at those
norms and standards that you can adopt. But two, on the presentation, I'm happy that you've also written this down, that we really still have a long way to go for. Look at the figures that you have presented to us. If you look at how many women own companies that are on grade 9, in fact, starting from the lowest grade. So, my question, if I can ask you, as the people that prepared this document, what measure of incentive are you doing? Because the law is there. That says that at least 30% must be given to women-owned companies. There. So, what sort of more incentive that is doing to ensure that is recognized, that is in the law? Lastly, on the issue of the AG, AG raised some issues here. Much as though you have done well, but there are issues that AG raised, which I think they are room matters that you also have picked up, and we also appreciate that already you have an action plan to address some of the issues. And that pre-OD, I think it will go a long way in ensuring that you get a clean one, because now we still have matters. The issue of policies, AG picked that up. The issue of policies and the issue, I think that one you also did indicate to the issue of staff. Also, AG raised that. So, what measures do you have to ensure that? Because what AG is also saying is that due to this issue of staff complement, there is something wrong with your record keeping, or what? I know it's a good thing, but AG raised the issue of record keeping. Maybe due to the lack of staff. So what are you doing to address that? The issue of policies, that is the picking up, and the issue of the staff complement. But we appreciate how we have been performing so far. We also want to say, keep it up, but the transformation, I know, it's not easy, but we need to change the mindset. We also need to change some of the things that we think that as for us to do the transition. Thank you.
Yes,
okay.
I had one omission on the target.
Yeah.
The target is on slide 11. That's a target of 15% downtime. The standard, I believe, in the private sector is 0.1% downtime. Uptime is 99.9%. Here we have uptime of 85%, which is a huge discrepancy between the target that you set and what the private sector actually has. So why such a low target, if I can put it that way? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the question. Maybe let me start by saying, if we have not been able to answer all questions, we commit to submit a written response to them, just so that also our answers are on record. But we will try and do the best we can with the time we have. I'm going to focus more on issues of capacity in the organization, as has been identified by the the honourable members, but also identified by the AG and the ripple effect of that. Honourable members will recall that we had been working on the process for a very long time as the entity. And that process was firstly just to understand what our entity is about, what capacity it would need, and therefore what kind of job gradings must be in place, and all of that. And that perhaps took us longer than we had anticipated, and I think we must start by saying that. This process was started off by the previous board. It went on all the way to the current board. So obviously we lost a lot of time because when a new board comes in, it needs to understand, get educated on processes. But ultimately we got there and we finalized that process. Now this was approved, I think, last year. October. So this was approved last year, October. So from that, there is a lot of consultation that must happen between management and organized labor and management and board and everybody. So all of those processes, of course, took much longer than we had anticipated. But we also appreciated that they had to take a long time so that everyone who is a key stakeholder understands, and there is no challenging once you start capacitating and filling the positions in terms of that. So that has happened, slow as it may have been, but we are now in a better space where we are able to fill the positions based on the system. So that's the one aspect which deals with the whole organizational framework for the entity. The second point related to that, we then said as the board, in as much as we are still working on this, we must however fill the position in executive management for leadership purposes, because if an organization does not have executive management, then it means there is no leadership. Honorable members will recall that we said at a particular point in time we had an acting CEO, an acting CFO, an acting COO, an acting strategy, and acting CIO, everyone was acting. So obviously it takes a lot of time to get everybody appointed. So we started with the process of appointing the CEO. That process is under consideration naturally by our shareholder. The second was to look at the CFO. We've since appointed the CFO. The CIO, we've since appointed the the COO is under the process, the recruitment process, and we hope to conclude that process soon as well. So other positions related to that will be filled now that obviously we have been given the necessary permission by our shareholder, because there was a point, members would recall, where that process was put on hold for a considerable amount of time. But when we got that permission from the Honourable Minister, we then started proceeding with the filling of those positions. Now, naturally, there is always an impact when these things happen. One, obviously, we as the board, we try to not get too close to the process of managing, because there is always a conflict once the board gets steps in to say, look, let's deal with this way. Because then management thinks that you are interfering in their space, and correctly so. So we've maintained that distance, but we've also come as close as possible to management to enable management to continue filling some key strategic positions as soon as reasonably possible. Just about a week or so ago, we had our own stress session where, again, we implored management to ensure that we fast-track the filling of positions. But we can't deny the fact that there would be impact of these delays of filling the executive positions, because these were the executives who were supposed to help us fill the positions in the first place. So now that they are in place, we are putting a lot of pressure on them to fill the positions
below them. So we do regret that. We don't say it with pride. We regret that deeply, but it was one of those unavoidable things that we needed to do. Some of the consequences associated with what we are talking about would be, in some areas, obviously the poor definition of targets would come from there, where people are all acting. The real focus on some of these things, you can't say it will be 100% anywhere in the world. You just can't say that. Certainly, that had an impact, but even on the overall performance, we had an impact, and we felt as the board had our own soul searching. We've had a joint soul searching with management, and we all agree that we could have done better, but under the circumstances, there's so much you can do without human beings being in place. Other impacts, obviously, on document management and those issues, we did have problems. We don't think they are material in every aspect of the business. Certainly, there would be areas of the business where these issues are a problem. So in the registration systems, you might find that those areas were impacted probably the most in such a way that we were not, in some instances, able to meet our target of 21 days for registration or first-time registration simply because of capacity-related issues. So those are issues that I think honourable members must take into account in giving us a stick, which we accept wholeheartedly, but also give us a little bit of understanding so that we are able to give you the performance you would be proud of as we move forward. And then on the issue of a rollover, the CFO will respond to that, but just in general, the rollover treasury has been very kind to us. We must first accept that. And secondly, they also understand where we are with the processes. We've been very transparent in getting them involved so that they also understand why we need the rollover that we need. The rollover that we had requested was for just building offices for the CIDB, because wherever we are renting and we do not have offices of our own. Even if we do rent, right now we are on a month-on-month, or at least we were on a month-on-month lease until we got a little bit of a reprieve. But so any entity can operate on a month-on-month basis, which is why we would have been given that understanding by National Treasury. But we're under pressure to conclude the procurement of our own space, not only at head office, but also in the region as reasonably quick as possible. The rest of the questions I'm going to give to my colleague. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The questions, thank you, were very comprehensive. We will take them. The issue of the clean audit, yes, we definitely are striving to work towards that. We still have a way to go. One of them is that, yes, we want to do the pre-financial statement and get the pre-audit done in this year. But I think that, yes, we're putting a lot into it, and we're hoping to improve. We really are trying there. We do take the point, yes, that the target was around under the 80% mark, and yes, linked to that, we must try to achieve those targets and we're there totally. On the one hand, the growth fixed capital formation, the percent of development support, this was one of the issues where in our current strategic plan, you know, it was specified those years ago, and it was kind of a macroeconomic dependency that says the amount that will go into development as a percent in terms of gross fixed capital formation. Now, I think to an extent earlier we said that SCADB, we just also need to improve in terms of our target setting, because it's what's in our control to influence it. There. So really, and then the 0.05 came from the strategic plan, but on the annual was 0.01. And I think that realization came over the years that CADB, you know, cannot directly have a macroeconomic target, but we must be more clear. So the 0.05 was clear, we're not going to achieve that from quite early on. The issue on the workplace learning opportunities, here, this is once again a strong linkage with regulations that have been in the pipeline that will then enable us to achieve those type of targets. So one specific example we recall to be practical, let's take the best practice project assessment scheme. In terms of that, there was the issue of two areas covered there, enterprise development and skills development. In terms of those standards that will become mandatory through the regulation, X amount of the percent or X percent of the project value would go to enterprise development and X amount of skills development. That would enable us to then achieve those targets. We are working closely with the ministry in terms of getting the regulations approved. Some of the financial issues will come back. The CFO will cover them. The other revenue streams, I think you'll provide some information there. In terms of the world skills, we had 25 TVET colleges, or 20, over 20 TVET colleges participating. Actually, just three candidates were then taken across. In terms of that, we did have a female candidate as well. The other question related to where state to become, we didn't do very well in terms of overall our performance, but it's also an indication on it's a lesson that we learned from state to become, how to actually influence our colleges to be more competitive, to train people better. So definitely those learnings do come back. And a lot of times the competitions that we go to, you find that even the use of technology has been so much more enhanced in terms of basic artisan type of work as well. So we did, the point about making sure that those learners then do get employment, we would have to then track, do more to track what happens to those learners there. I think the paper you're there on the world skills.
Thank you, CEO. In terms of the world skills, the CEO did indicate that we had three candidates who went to Russia, who won in different categories. And I think she's also specific in terms of the woman candidate. She won in the electrical competition. And what she said that we will do, because that is partnership with the National Treasury, where we will identify about 150 contractors who will be part of the SME development, who should be overseen by the CIDP in the entirety for a period of 3 years. The skills unit have actually employed our unit, the enterprise development unit, to actually take the three candidates and it's part of a particular program. So at this point in time, of course, we will actually engage them, see if they will be willing to participate in this program for 3 years, where they will be put into this program and developed for 2 to 3 years, and of course making sure that we do their training and support. So we actually engage them, and then if they do indicate willingness to participate, they will be part of the program.
Okay, in the area of locality, there is the discussion, as members will know, related to what defines locality. And in terms of that regard, National Treasury and CIDB, we've engaged in terms of CIDB's standard on contract participation goals and making sure there's no contradiction between what we define in terms of our CPGs and Treasury. But I think we have to acknowledge collectively that there are issues of difference of opinion related to, or different positions taken related to locality, where it's deemed in some areas that it's the entire South Africa, and in other areas that it's actually local. I think what's critical is that in terms of the PPPF regulations as well, there is a lot of movement in terms of a revised procurement bill that will then be coming out that will seek to improve the issues of divisions in terms of the PPPFA and regulations as well. The member raised the point about the tally in the table on slide 9, quite correct. It's actually on industry performance, it's 3 and not 4. So that would then give the 23, if you track through the table. As I say, in world skills, in one of the categories, we actually came out 50-something out of 60 in really overall. But it does really move us along in terms of knowing where we're standing in terms of that. So it, no, it increases the competitiveness. And the TVET colleges that are involved, you know, they actually join, the key ones are joining us, and they can actually see what we need to do to improve in terms of our artisan focus. The comment was good about the subcontractors, and in terms of the link to a few of the questions, we would like to move the register to requiring subcontractors to be registered for various reasons. One of the reasons is that it brings them into the system. There's a lot of cases we have where subcontractors come to CADB and require it to be registered. But you find that the contract documentation is also not up to standard, and the main contractor hasn't been playing the role as well. So by having it in the system, we can also regulate it. You know, we've come up on our website with, we've published standards for contract documentation, even for subcontracting. But you find that the take up from this, so we can then enforce it if they're on the register. So definitely we're moving towards that. The issue was raised also by the honourable member related to the grading criteria and actually the linkage with competence and performance and all of that. So, you know, it's been a bit of a emotive discussion, because on the one hand with the register, you know, the role CADB plays is you've got this macro register that you're running, and you also don't want the register to be exclusionary as well. But in the same vein, you want the register to be credible also. So this is the parameters. At the moment, what's happening is that we did one round of consultation where we actually would look at potential amendments to the criteria to take into account the competence recognition. And also linked to that, very important, is over what period of time contractors have to become, to be supported in being competent as well. That's also critical. And there'll be a timing related to that. But I must say it was very well spotted, that question. It was spot on. It's actually very close to what we've been discussing. In terms of the contractor fines, the CFO may come in, but most of the fines, if not all, are related to actual contractor breaches in terms of our regulations. Now, particularly, let me give you an exact example. We have contractors that submit false information for registration, tax clearance certificate, track record, financial statement. And in terms of our legislation, we are then empowered to sanction those contractors, and those are mostly in terms of fines there to contractors. So it's related to that. In terms of I'll leave the financial matters for the CFO. In terms of our fixed-term contracts, we currently have fixed-term contracts at all levels within the CIDB contractors. What was important, or the direction from the board, because we've had FTCs, as we call it, for a number of years, in order to be fair to those contractors, they CIDB will equalize the benefits that those fixed-term contracts have. But also that they also be given opportunity in terms of the organizational design. So the FTCs, fixed-term contracts, are right up to our legal side and right down to our administrative side, and they are then also given opportunities in terms of the organizational design. The particular one is the disability related to FTC. Offhand, I'm not sure about the disability on the one FTC case, but the CFO can add.
Thank you, FTC. We do have one employee who is at partially blind, and she is currently with you. As I said, she's within the system contract, and in terms of the benefit in the project, she also now qualifies for the maximum benefit as any second employee, and indeed she's going to be pretty much as soon as we finalize the OP, part of the people is going to be given opportunities to be within the OP.
Okay, our chairperson partially answered about the key positions that are vacant in terms of, chairperson answered that question of vacancies in the AG, but there were other parts of that question from the members, including lack of qualified and skilled staff to support management, and then training as well in terms of support. So we've moved very far in terms of our process to assess, you know, what CADB needs ideally to perform optimally, what type of skills that we need. And we've done that. It's been a very, you know, restructuring is a very difficult process. But we've gone through the process, and we're at a stage where we are almost on the migration of staff and the advertising of key priority positions. And also we looked at certain business units where we would need to have the correct skills. Finance department, example, registration services. Another key area is in terms of compliance enforcement, where we've really looked at beefing up that unit. Because the member mentioned earlier about the projects, for example, the Lady Smith and the project register. And one of the key issues we have is the poor compliance by client departments for our register of projects. So, you know, a key area for us is to take forward our organizational design process. And within that process, our training system and all of that is in a much more structured way. related to the OD, we've also beefed up our human resource capacity as well that will then support in terms of the training. I think the question on closely monitoring main contractors dealing with subcontractors, the move to include subcontractors in the registration will assist CADB in that regard. We do have the demographics and the spread in terms of our contractors. What we do find, as you know, is that as the economic activity, the economic conditions and where the projects are, that's where you find the contractors. But I think it's important to state that some of your biggest contractors, your 8 and 9, sometimes 7, they might have a head office in Gauteng, but their projects are really, they do projects all over the country. But certainly the bulk of your bigger companies are based in Gauteng. So it's your grading actually follows where the work is. In terms of the other areas, we'll ask you to cover some of the finance areas, but before we do that, we'll just come in on a few areas. The issue of the CADB and CBE having a discussion, and we can certainly do that. I think one area that we've already started as the entities, we've already started an assessment in terms of the value add of those entities. Really in terms of the government mandate, in terms of the shareholder and other priorities. So that has already started. Important point, I think, was raised related to the private sector. And in terms of, for example, some companies that would be predominantly seeking public sector work are at a disadvantage because you get a lot of firms that have access to the private sector type of projects. Now, the CADB Act is under review currently. So the department's policy unit is running a process to review the CADB Act. CADB is naturally part of that process, and part of the discussion is then the extent to which the Act applies to the private sector. There's a lot of discussions related to that. So as it goes, we'll definitely keep that close as a key type of issue. In terms of women-owned contractors, the key to us is every intervention that we do, we have a focus and we ensure that our partnerships also focus on women contractors. So if you look at our CTEC Construction Incubator, even when you roll out the jobs fund, we will also prioritize those targets. Very important, as we mentioned earlier, the best practice fee and the standards that will be mandatory as well, enterprise development and skills development, those targets for women contractors will also be prioritized in terms of those areas. I want to comment on the system downtime as well. You're quite right. I mean, the targets are supposed to be 99%. So what happened with CADB in our transition in terms of ICT? I think it was about a year ago already, we started the process of migrating our services to a cloud-based service. We had, as CADB grew, we actually, became a national entity with offices around the country. But when we started off in a certain way, and our systems were developed in a certain way. So as we stand, the move is then to be cloud-based. In other words, we don't have our own technology and servers on our premises. And if you look at your cloud-based platforms, they are 99% uptime. We don't, as CADB, have to have the headaches of bandwidth and infrastructure, those kind of issues. So indeed, our service provider has been contracted. One of the ones that has been a big achievement recently is the online grade 1 registration. As well as the grade 2 to 9. But even our financial, our internal administration systems are also moving to cloud-based as well. And in terms of those, you do get your uptime that's really under 90. So I agree with you. The standard should be 99%. And then we will definitely be able to take us there. I think that in terms of, we just want to, before I hand over to the CFO on some areas, the issue of the construction mafia, I don't think we should. Okay, so that word often is very emotional because we're sitting in meetings. I think some people don't like to use the word construction mafia, so we'll keep away from that. But in terms of the site disruption, I think in that one, there collectively we have a lot that we need to do in terms of that matter. There's the PPF regulation, as we know, with a 30% subcontracting. There's a procurement bill that's to provide improvement in terms of that situation. But really the role that CADB, one of the key roles we can play in terms of guidelines and guidance to the industry, in terms of implementing these prescripts. I'm not sure that if our chair would like to add anything on the sizes option.
Just on what the CIDB could do, the CIDB could engage more. From the system's point of view, we can't say all the disruptors are already on the CIDB register of one form or the other. However, we can't also say they are not. But what we continue to do is to engage at least with those who are already in the register, so that so in our stakeholder forum, those are part of the engagement we are having, so that at least we know that we are talking on the standards and the guidelines that we are providing. The people who are already in the register understand how that ought to work, and that going and disrupting sites is not part of what we would encourage. However, there are more things that we as the CIDB and the board, we've agreed that we need to look at this problem a lot more, not just on a narrow basis of a little intervention here and a little intervention there, but find not just us as the CIDB, but also working with our shareholder department, because we do believe that a combination of interventions, not just one intervention, is going to assist us. And I'll clarify, because in the engagement we've had with some of these people who are disrupting sites, some of the issues they are raising are quite legit. It's just that we don't have short-term solutions for those issues. So if people say we are here, the project is here, we are contractors here, and we are not regarded as being capable and competent to do the work here, and you are transporting contractors from everywhere in the country to come and work here, and we are not working. What can the CIDB do about that necessarily? There are rules, and the Honourable Member spoke about the 30%. That 30% rule is on the one hand, we are very excited about it, but on the other, the interpretation needs to be refined between ourselves and National Treasury in particular, but between ourselves and municipalities and everybody in those areas where these things are happening. Because if you take a broad interpretation and you say any South African who has a business is a local person, it then gives you the site disruptions, because people say, but a local is a local. It must fall within municipal boundaries. And you can't say they are incorrect when they give it that interpretation. But similarly, you can't say National Treasury is necessarily incorrect in saying a South African company is a local company, because if you look at it broadly, it is indeed a local company. And if we are going to take a narrow interpretation and say local is within the municipal boundaries, what you are likely to have is that those people who are within those municipal boundaries can't operate anywhere else. So once the opportunity is gone, they can't go in and look for opportunities elsewhere, because they're too municipal people who must then benefit from that. So it's a bigger issue than just a narrow site disruption. It's an indicative problem that I think we should be dealing with. A site disruption, in our view, is a manifestation of this problem. So I just thought I would clarify that. But we welcome, Honourable Member, contributions on how on what else can we look at, strictly speaking, as the CIDB. And if we can be guided further, we would be honoured to take that guidance and see what else can we improve in our system. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I want to come on the finance side. I think there are a few issues which we raised on the finance side. In terms of the revenue from alternative revenue streams, CIDB mainly generates two revenue streams other than what we receive from the fund. The first one is the registration from the our contractors, which is in the tune of about 100 million. And of course, we've got a portion which we receive from the investment coming from our bank account, which is, I think, sitting at about 240 million. And we receive roughly about 7% return on that particular investment, giving us about 30 million or so. So that is pretty much how we generate our revenue as a CIDB. In terms of the issues are pertaining to the increases in terms of the expenditure. The venue expenses, yes indeed, we was increased about 700,000. We had quite many activities which required CIDB to hire venues. We collected our NFS within the particular period. Our provincial different programs where we are required to actually spend money towards securing venues for those activities. And in terms of the rental increase, yes indeed, we went up in the previous years, including the 2017-18. CIDP never used to pay any rental in the provincial space. And the relationship which we had in particular in Mpumalanga was that Mpumalanga was responsible for paying for CIDP's premises. But then I think due to their own financial challenges, then they were not able. So the reason why you see a big jump in this year is the fact that we started paying for Mpumalanga because of the fact that the department was not able to pay for us anymore. So as part of that process, we then had to incur the expenditure, hence the big increase. However, I think that as a society, did actually give us a warning to say we must not rely on provincial government to provide for the society the hospital accommodation. As a result, we are going in all nine provinces where we want to have our own independent managed contractor so that they be able to show the cost in terms of how CIDP is managing the entities in the income statement and the balance sheet. And on the issue of the audit improvement, in the issue of the audit performance, improving from 30% to about 70%. I think most of the work and engagement should come and the benchmark special go to the board who was actually very close to the process where they ensure that we develop a proper corrective action plan and we follow those corrective action plans. And I think also important the fact that even on the aspect that we did not achieve in the previous year, they were part of the program that we rolled out this year. So the services that we are showing here is just for what we were planning for this year. But even on the other, on the 2017-18 that we were able to achieve, we went back and then we developed a plan for them and we were actually able to achieve them. So I think for the method of application and of course the guidance from the CEO as well as the board in terms of us achieving the development second. In terms of the IT, the IDP is now investing heavily on the IT infrastructure. In the year 2017, we did manage to get this sort of over from the treasury, I think treasury to understand where the IDP is coming from and to engage them and we are transparent in how we do this. We asked for a provision of about 80 million to be provided for the IDP investing in infrastructure. And treasury being open and engaged, they did allow us that particular rollover. And I think in the previous year, the CEO can come in as well. We have been able to appoint the company, and of course the funding will come from the rollovers. And the company in March is really trying to transform the CIDB infrastructure into IT infrastructure, including CIDB being the first company to move into cloud. And I think it's because of the fact that we have been able to have that relationship with treasury, whom we were able to get the rollover. So the money from the infrastructure investment is coming from the approval over which was granted by treasury to the CIDB. I think we've covered most. Thank you.
Yes, thank
you. And I think just also to add in terms of the CIDB partnership with the colleges. The fact that we've got about 22 colleges participating in this world scale is that not only about participation, but what CITP also do and need in those colleges. I think because for the fact that when those colleges participate, as CITP, we take initiative because what we then do, we go and then do assessment in terms of the tools and readiness of those countries, what type of tools they have to equip these particular learners to be able to be competitive and be able to compete, in particular within the world scale. And in most cases, we find that the tools that the colleges are not using are not adequate. What we then do is that let me invest in tools which will then be to those colleges. For example, if you look at how much will then invest, pretty much we'll just buy all toolboxes, about five toolboxes which cost about $100,000 each. And then we then, after the competition, after the participation, those toolboxes will be left with this particular college so that at least they will be used by the colleges in training their students who are going forward. So each and every year when they participate, we come back and we do investment in terms of the tools so that at least they're able to have proper tools to use in training their particular learners. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd just like to pick up two issues. Maybe the prior learning issue, it's also linked to the question of the member before in terms of the registration criteria as well as the linkage to competence and that. So in terms of the competence recognition system, it does provide for contractors to be able to, it does provide for a process where a contractor can be assessed in alternative ways of recognition in terms of previous experience. So there is provision for that. If the criteria, the registration rules are amended to take into account competence, that competence recognition has a process of recognition. And there's a process for that, a proper assessment process and involving interviews and portfolios and at end. So that one then is covered. In terms of the, potentially covered we will be going out to consult on that. But also to state that we have made traction in terms of defining the rules in terms of competence recognition. So a lot of work has been done in the last few years. In the area of sharing of expertise, I think, yes, it is an opportunity for us to look into. We've had across the CMB entities some engagement recently where we actually assess areas of potential overlap and areas of collaboration. And indeed, in terms of your support areas, your legal, your administration, those type of areas, there is room for us to actually, and it makes sense to do so. It makes good business sense because you would actually be saving. And some of those experiences, particularly legal, for example, they could easily plug into different environments. They could be based somewhere, but there could be ways in which we do that. Also with the department as well, for example, in the review of the CIDB Act, there is a collaboration between the legal department of the department and the legal department of CIDB, and we are tapping into each other's capacity. But I think you take the point, I think there's a huge potential to in terms of collaboration across entities, and I think that's the point you take with us. I think the one question was in terms of the code of conduct. And in terms of this, when you look at the CIDB code of conduct, we have to look at it in terms of the current provision, in terms of the current legislation. There is a review of the CIDB Act underway, and there is areas that have to be for improvement in terms of that. Currently, how we are enforcing, the principles of the Act and the regulations, which the code of conduct is a part. And then we've made a lot of traction in the last, I think, 12 months. We've had a significant number of sanctions that we've implemented in terms of that. I think a particular case, maybe for discussion on another day, was the area of collusion. And we know that collusion matter, where in terms of X amount of companies entered into an agreement with government, and there were X amount guilty of collusion that did not enter into an agreement. And I mean, that's the reality of that situation. And in terms of where we are, we definitely have played a very supportive role in terms of, first of all, CIDB's role in terms of the voluntary, the VRP agreement, and we have a monitoring role. And we play that with, in terms of the monitoring role with the trust administrator. But then the question is, what about the company that also were in breach of the code of conduct, and they entered into the collusive behavior and found guilty of it? So we've indeed prioritized pursuing those companies as well. We've entered into engagement with those companies. Those companies have expressed a willingness to also contribute to settlement in terms of their behavior. Not all of them. Some companies that were not willing from our board, CIDB is pursuing those companies. And also, the experience and learning from them, maybe also on another day, is that some of those companies have actually changed shape and form, and sometimes deliberate, sometimes not deliberate. But even then, if a company is going through a business rescue, one could theory, we could also then implement or insist on certain things, part of the process, as part of the rescue process, that those companies have to play a role as well in terms of correcting those wrongs. I think I'd like to stop there, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, CEO, CFO, and the team from CIBD for your clear explanations and responses to the comments and questions raised. We also appreciate that there is a coming amendment on some of the policies that we currently use. But just a comment before we break, start CPE may come in. It's very much unfair that those companies that are usually found guilty of collusion, they just pay a fine. And remember, when they pay that fine, it's just a drop in the ocean in terms of what they have. Which means there are no harsher sentences towards them. And tomorrow they change the face, they change whatever, and they will do the collusion again. And they will, in fact, they are rewarded because they are going to get these businesses because they are there at grade 9. I think that's one area that we also need to deal with in terms of these policies that we change. Thank you, members.
So, just wanted to know if my question on the GF was answered and whether it was going to be sent in writing.
Yes. I can just repeat very quickly that in terms of that target, it was specified as 0.05. That was a strategic 5-year target. That's in terms of development support as a percent of gross fixed capital formation. The learning over the past 5 years, CDB was, when you set a macroeconomic dependent target, you have to ask the CDB, how much can you do to really influence the best of performance, what can you do to achieve that? And over the years then we've learned that you find that even with your ABP saying 0.01%, it's clearly less than your 5-year target. But I think there was an acknowledgement that we just had no chance in terms of CDB meeting that. And the lessons that we learned that we spoke about earlier is that in our new strategic planning process, we actually have specified targets, not easy targets, but I mean targets that are impactful, that by CDB working very smart, we can actually then achieve that. So I think that was in terms of that area.
Thank you.
Honourable
members,
yes,
I and the team, we're taking a break of 15 minutes to allow CDE to set up everything. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.